You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Do I have to shout? Oh, good. Oh, man. We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. Welcome to West Hill United, where we are trying to make sense of religion in our own way. We have a value system that recognizes the interconnectedness of life and the importance of just doing good, as you can tell by what's going on the screen. For those of you who are new here, West Hill is and what it is not, we welcome those people who have traditional beliefs as well as those who identify as atheist. We stress values, not theology. It is the connectedness with all people as well as with all life which stands at the core of our values. Some of you may find our service unusual. We invite you to participate to the extent that you feel comfortable. We also invite you to go to the lobby next door afterwards for coffee and conversation.
Grounded, guided, growing. A time for centering. From Scott Kearns.
So this week I gave you a choice in that first hymn. I played it in three different keys. The low one was for the ones that complain that the music's too high, and the high one was for the others that do the opposite. So the next time we have here is again not formula, but it's a chance to reground ourselves in, as Elaine has just said, in those big things of life. And sometimes I think we are so exposed to things that 100 years ago people wouldn't even have known about. They would have heard about it maybe in a telegram a month or two later, but we turn on our internet and our television and we're exposed to this huge world, and we cannot but see how interconnected it is. And I've chosen for the centering song the song about kindness, loving kindness. And so I'm just going to ask Peter, when I sit down and start to play, I've got just put some quotations about kindness on the screen, and some of them are from pretty well-known people. And when you quote from somebody well-known, it doesn't mean they're always kind. It doesn't mean they've always lived it. And that's the same as with all of us. We are all for it, but do we, you know, we realize we often are not kind. We are unkind or insensitive, and the closer the relationship, the more chance for that to happen in it. I think we come here to say it matters, and we want to be growing in kindness. So I'm just going to play that song for a little bit, and just, Peter, if you could just scroll, just give people time to read each one. You may know that some of the writers, but just remember they were people too, but they were trying to add their voice of saying, you know, we need that growing edge of kindness a little bit more, a lot more. And the last slide, if I'm remembering correctly, talks about the importance of it being kindness to yourself and kindness to others. It's the same gesture. So respect and compassion for self and respect and compassion for the world goes together.
The readings today deal with the theme of kindness. The first one is from Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol, a book I'm sure you all know and have seen the movie many times. And it demonstrates Dickens believed that what we need is not a change in the system, but just a change in the human heart. Oh, cold, cold, rigid, dreadful death, set up thine altar here, and dress it with such terrors as thou hast at thy command. For this is thy dominion. But of the loved, revered, and honored head, thou canst not turn one hair to thy dread purposes, or make one feature odious. It is not that the hand is heavy and will fall down when released. It is not that the heart and pulse are still, but that the hand was open, generous, and true, the heart brave, warm, and tender, and the pulse a man's. Strike, shadow, strike, and see his good deeds springing from the wound to sow the world with life immortal. Austin offered his wisdom for the journey. And the second reading is, again, from a book you may or not have read, but you have certainly seen the movie, Gone with the Wind, which is set against the Civil War of the United States. The main characters, you remember, is Becky, Scarlett O'Hara, I keep thinking of her, Becky Sharp. Scarlett O'Hara, who is self-centered and vain and manipulative. But there's another minor character in there, Melly, who's low-key, generous, and kind. And we tend to forget about her because Scarlett steals the limelight. In this reading, the compassionate Melly speaks out against some cruel remarks made at a women's committee meeting, having told the appalled crowd that she plants flowers on the graves of Yankee soldiers when she visits the grave of her brother, Charles Hamilton. Remember, she's from the South. But how nice it would be to know that some good Yankee woman, and there must be some good Yankee women, I don't care what people say, they can't all be bad. How nice it would be to know that they pulled weeds off our men's graves and brought flowers to them, even if they were enemies. If Charlie were dead in the North, it would comfort me to know that someone, and I don't care what you ladies think of me, her voice broke again, I will draw from both clubs and I'll pull up every weed off every Yankee's grave that I can find and I'll plant flowers too. And I just dare anyone to try to stop me. Offered his wisdom for the journey.
May we walk in his light.
Focused Moments from Greta Vosper.
So the theme today is edification, the art of acknowledging what is good in one and bringing it out so that it becomes for them, even though it is of themselves, it becomes for them a model about how they might live. And I had someone special in mind as I wrote this one this week. And so this one is for you, Scott. You have this way of setting your shoulders, squaring your feet, and leaning in. It's when the world is out of sync and shows its torn and worried side, when pain pours over what might have been to shrivel a day's bright promise. Like an ancient warrior steeling himself for battle, or a bear rising up to protect her young, you gather your energies, honed in former challenges, and seek the truth that yet may come. You marshal your terrifying force of will and challenge the one small world before you to turn toward a pure, uncompromising justice. It is and always will be a stance of beauty, a glimpse of goodness, an ownership of truth. Scott has been working these last several weeks at his place of employment, one of the regional long-term care facilities in Durham, struggling to encourage, challenge, draw boundaries, set parameters that provide for intimacy and sexual expression in long-term care. And it's a field that many people have not journeyed down. And so Scott has been creating documents that will be used across the region and probably across the province in trying to find that fine balance. I believe he's mentioned it here, but the consistent critique of his own work, the openness to the input of others, both those in support of that document and those opposed to it, have allowed for, though I never want to be in a long-term care facility, it allows for dignity and for respect and for the importance of intimacy and touch to be displayed in ways that may have previously labeled individuals as inappropriate. And so I'm really proud of that work that you've done. That's sort of what was in my head. Using the story of David and Bathsheba, which happened to be the biblical story for next year on that Sunday, we talked about accountability. And this week I want to shift us to this idea of edification, although they're two sort of similar things on the same side or on opposite sides of behavior. Accountability, as I spoke about it yesterday, is predominantly what we use to call someone to account for their inappropriate action, for having done something wrong. And in the story last week of David and Bathsheba, it's David's taking of someone else's wife and then orchestrating an armed conflict so that the woman's husband would be killed in battle, and therefore it would never be known that he had impregnated Bathsheba and not Uriah himself. And so this week we're looking more at edification, at how one creates and states, articulates, finds a way to present to the people around them those things that call the best out of them because they've actually been done by that person. So they're not setting an ideal that someone can't achieve. They're not putting out their behaviors that are uncharacteristic and saying, you have to be like this. They're saying, look what you did. Look what you did. This is beautiful. This is amazing. And lifting that up to edify the person that has done it. We do it with groups as well, to speak to groups about the work that they have done and find within the statement of how they want to live, the actions that come out of that statement, to reflect back to them, this is a good thing. Just in terms of accountability, to pick up on not last week's sermon, but one from 3 weeks ago, when I talked about becoming a vegan congregation, need to be accountable for an error there. I had been talking not about a vegan lifestyle, which meant that none of you could wear leather shoes in this place, ridiculous idea, but really about a plant-based, barrier-free diet for people who come here, so that whether someone eats, is a vegetarian or a vegan or eats, is a carnivore, an omnivore, most people are not just carnivores, an omnivore, whatever was laid on the table, they could eat it. And to encourage those who are willing to bake even with gluten-free products so that we can be accessible to those who don't eat gluten as well. So that's really what I meant. It wasn't about the entire vegan experience in this place. And it certainly, as I said then, wasn't about your own personal choices beyond this place. It's about creating that welcoming environment for people of all diets here in this space. So that's my little accountability moment for the day. But edification, as that holding up of our acts, can also be brought about by accountability. When we become accountable for those things that are under our responsibility, we take that accountability and we turn them toward goodness. So if we are in a position of authority or supervision, or we have control over a particular thing, we become accountable to those people for whom we work and who we employ, and we choose, because of that accountability, to live in accordance with our values as we've set them. And those values we say each week in terms of our words of commitment, but we live out in a variety of different ways, recognizing that there is a good and a challenged and a negative opportunity in almost any moment. I'm currently working with someone talking about the words of commitment and how they could be used by children to help children reflect on the fact that in any situation, no matter what it is, there's a choice that is to be made, a choice for living this out or a choice for living that out, and finding encouragement and the strength of a foundation that invites the child to make the appropriate choice, recognizing that their safety and security is paramount as well and comes into the context when we're talking about those kinds of ideas. But we've been looking at many times we've raised in this place over the course of the last several months issues of accountability in terms of political choices that have been made south of the border, and even some that have been made here, recognizing that accountabilities don't seem to be coming as quickly as they should be coming for some of the things that are being expressed. The unrest, the violence that took place in Charlottesville yesterday touched kind of close to home for some people. A woman with whom I've had long, extensive conversations was at that and was in danger, extreme danger at one point, and was pulled to safety by a friend. And many of you know Diana Butler-Bass. Her daughter was at that and had some minor injuries as a result of that. So it does come close to home even when it's far away. And the accountabilities need to be addressed. They need to be present. But the edification came about when Robin, who had been pulled out of the way, posted to Facebook a picture of her and this guy who she had no idea who he was, but he's the person who had pulled her to safety, putting himself at risk at the same time. And she took that moment to lift him up and show him to everyone she knows that this is the man who didn't even know who I was, knows nothing about me, and yet stepped into the fray in order to pull me to safety. Those kinds of actions take place, and that edification that Robin offered through that post yesterday was an example of that. Today, as Scott said, we're going to Ottawa, and I wanted to talk to about his mom a little bit. And I'll share this with the rest of his family when we're together. But I think that one of the things that Margaret did most profoundly and beautifully in her life was the work of edification. She consistently saw in people something that was positive and brought that out and shone light on it. An example. When she was recuperating in a rehab hospital, after breaking a leg, she was in a room with four people. The other three didn't speak any English. And the staff who were responsible, one staff person in particular who was responsible for the four people in that room, was cruel and abusive and in front of us. So we could only imagine what she was like when we weren't there. And indeed, Scott's mom pleaded with us not to say anything to the supervisors because when we had done that, the behavior had become worse. And so we were concerned for her. She was there for several months. We were concerned for the other people in the room that weren't able to be cared for. One time I went in and one of them wanted me to help her get into bed, which of course I couldn't possibly do. She was in a wheelchair. I walked around the entire ward looking for someone to help her, and there wasn't a single staff person on that ward with probably 100 people in beds and in various states of need at that point in time. So it was a very challenging situation for all of those people to be in. On one day, Scott came in and one of them said that there was no power. And he goes, "There's power." And they said, "Well, we've been pushing the help button for hours and no one's come," which was an indication of the kind of care. On one day, we went in to visit her. And the woman who was the most abusive and challenging came into the room. And we sort of steeled ourselves for what was going to happen. And Margaret, lying in bed, looks at her and says, "Well, do you have it?" And the woman said, "Yeah." And she came right up to the bed and she pulled out of her pocket a little photo book, you know, like the kind of photo books that people put pictures of their grandchildren in. And she pulled that photo book out and she sat on the side of Margaret's bed and she showed her a whole set of cakes that this woman had decorated with extraordinary skill and artistry. And Margaret spoke about every one of them as a work of art. She had taken something that she'd learned. She didn't let the anger and the hostility and the abuse that she and her roommates were experiencing, she didn't let that color or be the predominant theme of what was going on in that room. She found out enough about that person to know something that was important and to invite that person to bring it and share it with her so that she then could edify the woman in that one piece of beauty that she brought into the world. And it changed the nature of what was going on in that room for those months that Margaret remain there. But she's also responsible for who Scott is and what I have learned about edification from Scott in terms of finding those good things that someone does. She had a practice that she did with Scott. Whenever he did something that was particularly good, she would put her hand up and he would put his head down and she would tap his head and say, "Noble head." Pulling out and making sure that he paid attention to the things that happened that he did that were good. So often we live our lives and we run doing from one thing to another, to another, to another, and some of us often hear about the great things that we do, but others don't. We don't take the time to tell somebody, "That was an amazing thing that you did. I was impressed that you spoke that way to that person. It was lovely to see you engage, even though that was difficult. Or, I know where you're coming from, and I know it because you had the courage to tell me." We don't often take the time to edify those who cross our paths or who coexist with us in close quarters. I have a feeling that it probably has a lot to do with that 54 and 24 and 19 years of marriage that happened in your family, is that taking the moment to say, "I appreciated that, that was good," or "That was a beautiful gesture," or "Thank you for taking care of me in that manner." I think that the ways that we hold to one another can be made so much more beautiful by the ways that we express our appreciation for it. I'm going to move us on to another piece of work that's by a man named Kent Keith, which has been used and attributed to Mother Teresa in a different way. In order to take you from this safe place in which we gather out to a world where not everyone lives so that the devil would say in the morning, "Ah, shit, he's up," but sometimes live in ways that are not particularly worthy of edification, where we run into cruelty and hostility There are angers that embed themselves in people on a cellular basis, it seems, where there's almost nothing you can say to them or experience from them other than anger and hostility and perhaps even violence. We run into these people all the time. Sometimes we don't even know that's who they are, except they look at us with a strange look, or they cut us off in traffic, or they, you know, make sure their cart gets into the grocery line first. I don't know. We know nothing about them, more often than not. And sometimes we know them intimately. And it doesn't matter how we have chosen to live our lives. When we come up against someone like that, we're bound to feel put down by them, by something they say, or angry ourselves by something that they've done. It brings out the worst in us instead of the best in us. And we don't take time to find out that they're cake decorators and that they have something that they do for other people that is extraordinary and beautiful. We don't take the time because all we see is this mass of annoyance and anger and rage. And so we sometimes, if we've run into that enough, we tend to sort of lob off whole portions of ourselves in order that we not be vulnerable in their presence. We don't want them to know that we're sensitive. We don't want them to know that it hurt when they said that. You know, when I wrote my GMATs, I can still remember the three questions that I know I got wrong. I can't remember any of the questions that I got right. And that was like 40 years ago. When people say something that's not nice, we tend to hang on to it. It's like, there's a law about it, actually, that says that we will remember the negative far longer than we will remember the positive. And so if we have run across people who are innately angry or filled with rage, and they have affected us in some way, when we were out doing something, when we were participating in something that we love, when we put ourselves out in some kind of vulnerable way, and they have put us down, we tend not to do that again. We don't want to say anything about it, so we don't raise it. But I want to share these words because I think that they invite us to be all that we can be, to be the gift that we can be to the world. One of the things that I have often said about Scott's mom is that she, and many of you will have heard me say this, she, as an evangelical Christian, never once let her faith get in the way of loving me. She let Scott know that she was highly disappointed in some of the things that he was doing, and, you know, some of the things that I did as well. She knew exactly what I did, but she never let those things get in the way of loving us. And I have on my necklace today, because this is made out of these candle holders, and she was a light in my life, so I'm wearing it because of that. And she stepped into moments and brought light to them whenever she possibly could. She edified them. So these are the paradoxical commandments, and many of you will have heard them before, and I'm going to invite them after the first couple of them. I'm going to ask you to give me the second line, because I'm figuring you're smart enough to do that. So here's the first line. People are illogical, unreasonable, and self-centered. Love them anyway. If you do good, people will accuse you of your selfish, ulterior motives. Do good anyway. If you are successful, you will win false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyway. The good you do today will be forgotten tomorrow. Do good anyway. Honesty and frankness make you vulnerable. Be honest and frank anyway. The biggest men and women with the biggest ideas can be shot down by the smallest men and women with the smallest minds. Think big anyway. People favor underdogs, but follow only top dogs. Fight for a few underdogs anyway. What you spend years building may be destroyed overnight. Build anyway. People really need help, but may attack you if you do help them. Help people anyway. Give the world the best you have, and you'll be kicked in the teeth. Give the world the best you have anyway. You are beautiful people. You each have stories that fill my heart. You've gifted one another in incredible ways and gifted the people beyond here in incredible ways. You have risked building things that you know others will take down. You have risked thinking big. You have risked succeeding and trusting and loving. And you have done it with courage and grace and sometimes stumbled along the way. But you have done these things. You know how it feels to do good, to be good, to think large, to create beauty, to seek after truth, to hold one another in challenging times. You've been there and you've done it, and I know you can do it again. So live these things out, no matter what the world comes to, no matter what you face when you leave this place. It's not all going to be pretty. But you can face it with beauty. I know you can, and I know you will. Thank you. I'm going to write another poem this week. It's going to be about when Scott squares his shoulders and sets his feet and leans in and tries to tell me something about me. I think I might have written that one a few times, actually. It means the world to me that you trust me with this work, that you trust me with holding the stories of who you are, that you trust me with the work of creating community that brings together people of diverse perspectives and understandings and challenges them to learn from you. It means the world to me that you let me do that. It means the world to the world that you do that outside this place, that you offer yourselves as the people who can speak truth in difficult situations, who can hold hearts that have been wounded, who can stand alongside someone whose rights have been denied, and just be there as a witness to what has happened. It means the world to the world that you do that work. So go from here, edify what is beautiful and right out there, and hold it to account that beauty might overcome what is wretched in this world, that love might heal what has been broken, and that truth might illuminate where we might go next. Go from this place in peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.